You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Christian Tierney. To call him accomplished would be an understatement, and yet to talk to Christian about what he's done in the last few years, it's clear to him that he's only just getting started. Originally from Dublin, Ireland, Christian is a photographer who started out filming sessions of musicians. That eventually grew into him photographing musicians on stage and off stage at festivals, and also photographing celebrities. It's easy to look at what he's done and be marveled at the quality of his work, but what's more impressive is the candor and honesty that he has, especially for someone so young. With this talk, we go into his work, how he got started, and where he wants to go from here. This is the 405 Exchange with Christian Tierney. Enjoy. Talk without the taint to hold. The doubts that should embrace your heart. Something that was really cool is last night you got to see the Academic play at our Mercury Lounge here in New York City. What was it like for you seeing a band like that, who's like made a name for themselves in Dublin, come to a place like this and sell out a show like that? Like, what was that like?
It's incredible. Those guys come from like a super small town in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Ireland, outside of Mullingar, and they were so shocked as well. Like, just to see a band who are doing so well in Dublin, but like, I've only ever seen them in Dublin, and like, to come to another continent and see them on their first headline tour, and for the room to be packed out, sold out, 200 people, singing back all the lyrics to like, not just the singles, but album tracks, and it's amazing. It's really cool to see. I'm so happy for them. The album's great. They're an amazing band, and they absolutely should be getting worldwide success, so fair play to them.
Yeah, that's really tough. You know, there's so much I want to ask you about, and I mean, a lot of it's obviously going to revolve around music. With like this next question specifically, like, you know, it's interesting. Over the years, I've been asked this in various ways, and it's never really intrigued me too much to be asked this or to ask other people this question, but it really intrigues me with you, because I feel like the way you shoot, what I love so much about your work is that it's not only like I feel like I'm seeing things from your eyes, but I feel like I could actually live an experience, even if it's for a moment.
Wow.
Like, I get that vibe when I look at your work. And
that's question, a big compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, of course, mate. Yeah, and the question I have for you is, like, what would you describe, like, the feeling you have when you're shooting a live show? Like, when you're shooting music, taking place in front of you, what is that like for you?
I don't know, I kind of like, do you ever hear of like people talking about creative flow? I can't remember who it was. It's like, it's the theory of creative flow, where you're doing something you love, and it's like, if you do something that is challenging, but not too difficult that you can't do it, but difficult enough that you're going to learn, it's going to test you. A lot of writers get it, painters, where they get into a state of flow where they kind of almost forget about everything else that's happening around them, and they're 100% focused on what they're doing. And I get it sometimes when I'm like trying to make music and stuff as well, where I can sit there for 4 hours and then I'll just like kind of wake up out of that state, and then I go, whoa, I didn't even feel those 4 hours go. I completely forgot. I didn't even think about looking at my phone once, didn't think about anything else. And that's kind of what shooting a gig is like for me. I think that's the closest I can get to it, where like, I don't really think about anything else that's happening other than being hyper aware of what I'm seeing during the show. I'm trying to get the best shot, I'm trying to find the best light, and that's kind of the feeling for me. It's like, it's less of a feeling, and it's more of a kind of a numbness, and then I kind of wake up out of it at the end of the show, and I'm like, whoa.
Kind of like a state of mind.
Yeah, but it's funny, because sometimes like, if I'm shooting a band that I love, or an artist I love, and I'm really into their music they make, and I know I'm getting good work, that's when I get it. But if I'm shooting a band where I don't care about the music at all, I find it very hard to get into it, and then I don't get into that state at all, and it just feels like a slog, and I'm like waiting for the show to end. And it's kind of binary, it's one or the other. Yeah, so I kind of aim for that, yeah.
What's amazing about that state of mind, like, because I can definitely relate to it as well, like with shooting acts, and I think what's beautiful is that, like, I feel like when you experience that, especially in ways where it's like, I don't want to say often, but when it becomes like part of your life, I think it becomes interesting to you how you don't experience that every day or within every other facet of life. Like, to be in a venue and to see the lights and everything and just like to experience that, it's beautiful what a ritual that can be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the best things about music photography as well, compared to other like streams of photography, is like, you're not in control of anything that's happening. So it's constantly challenging, and like every single show is a different challenge.
That's my favorite thing about it.
Yeah.
The fact so you have no control.
Yeah, exactly. And like you arrive at a venue and you've no idea what the lights are going to be like. You've no idea how the artist is going to move on stage. So there's no way you can ever, like if you're a fashion photographer, you can like learn how to get perfect studio lighting. And then that's, you're in charge of everything. And that takes an awful lot of skill. But in music photography, you can never get to a point where you're kind of, you've perfected it, because every single show is different and it's never the same. And I kind of love that.
I really love that too. No, something that intrigued me a lot when we talked a few days back is how you started off as a videographer.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I think is so wicked about that is, like, for some people listening who might not understand, because I know this kind of happens a bit. I think sometimes people assume if you could do video, you could do photo, and
yeah,
vice
yeah.
versa. Thing is, as you know, as me as a photographer and you as well, both a videographer and a photographer, we definitely understand the aspect that they're two, not completely different worlds, but different worlds.
Very different, yeah, absolutely.
I'm curious, what do you think it was about your background in video that helped you specifically when you were starting out with photos?
I think when I was doing video, I was always very focused on making a really nice shot and composing things well, and that was the thing that drew me into it, I suppose, making really nice looking things. And then I think like photography is like that like video so much. It's like camera movement, audio, the story that's happening on screen, the performances, color, absolutely everything. And I think photography is kind of the bits of video that I like the most. And then like I don't like having to worry about sound, and I don't often love to have to worry about like camera movement and how I'm going to edit and all that kind of stuff and how I'm going to sync the sound to the video. Whereas photography is just like, let's tell a story in one single frame, compose it how you want to compose it. And then color grading was always my favorite thing in video as well, so that's basically photo editing. And I don't know, I think that's probably where it came from.
You know, something else that I like about your work, and kind of goes into what I was saying before as well, is that like you definitely do touch up your photos quite a bit, but you do it in a way where like I could tell you have a respect that for whatever you're going to present to the world, there must be quite a lot of the element of what your actual eyes saw. What do you think that's fair to say with how you like to edit?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think so. One of my pet hates is like over editing of photographs. I don't hate it, I just like, it's just not something I do. But it's funny because like sometimes I look at photographers that I love and they do a lot of editing. It's kind of like there's a very fine line, I suppose, between like heavily retouching a photograph and editing a photograph and then just completely destroying a photograph.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. It's funny because like a lot of photography I love is like on kind of both ends of the spectrum, like supernatural stuff, and like a few like fashion photographers and stuff I love are like so natural and only do tiny minuscule color adjustments, and they make such a big difference that subtly. But then some other photographers I love like do collages and shoot on film and then process the film, and so that looks completely different, and then layer things on top of each other and tear things and burn. I've seen people like burn Polaroids and everything until they look completely differently.
Yeah.
And I love that as well. I think, I don't know, I don't really think about editing as like I have a specific style. And like I know there are a lot of photographers who try and edit every photograph in a specific kind of aesthetic, especially in the Instagram world where they want their feed to all look consistent. Whereas I kind of edit each photograph differently, and if a photograph needs a lot of color editing or is really, I find it's really bland, I'll add more color to it.
Yeah.
But if I feel like a photograph doesn't need a lot, I won't give it a lot either. I kind of treat every photograph differently.
Yeah, you know, I almost hesitate saying this because I feel like it's going to sound like such old person way of thinking, but like something that, and I'm definitely more inclined in the way you think, I think something that gets me with like the over editing, and especially like that kind of like Instagram approach, is that like, this is where it's going to sound so old person age. It's just like, I feel like a lot of the times I see pictures that are obviously very boring or have nothing to them, and that someone will put them up online just because they feel like the way it was edited makes it more exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think good editing can make a good photo better, but good editing can never make a bad photo good.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can never save a photo with editing. Like, if it's a bad photo, it's a bad photo. If it's a good photo, it's a good photo, regardless of how it's edited. I think that's definitely a thing. And I think as well, similar to that, like, especially in music photography and kind of celebrity photography, it's like the same way people think you can get away with a good photo, like with a bad photo if it's edited, people are like, oh, you can get away with a bad photo as long as there's a famous person in it. And I always try and think, is this a good photo with no editing? And if the answer is yes, then it's, I know it's a good photo with editing.
Yeah.
And the same, like, if there's a good photo, if the person in the picture was not famous at all,
yeah,
then I know it's a good photo as well. Yeah, I think good photography is good photography, and no editing can change that, I suppose.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, because something I noticed a little bit later on when I was doing photos, I'm sure you've noticed this as well, especially with, like, specifically photographing, I mean, you photograph more than just bands, but you do photograph a lot of bands.
Mm.
And something that happens when you photograph bands is that, like, there's almost like this weird kind of, like, you almost forget the fact that, like, for as big as and interesting as bands appear to you, they could still be such an insular thing, in the sense that in a larger context, people might not know who these people are. So one of my favorite things of being told over the years is, like, when someone likes a photo of mine and they have no idea who the person is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure you probably got a kick out of that as well. Like.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you can put up a picture of somebody who's mega famous, and regardless of how good a photo it is, it's going to get loads of likes just because there's a famous person in it. I think a lot of people kind of lean on that as a crutch and feel like their work is amazing because there's famous people in the pictures. But that is the best as well. Like, when you put up a picture of, like, if I put up a photo of, like, one of my friends, and it gets loads of likes, that's amazing, because then I know it's a really good photo and people aren't just liking it because Drake is in it.
Yeah, you know, you know which one of my couple favorite photos you've ever taken, like, actually? And it's funny, like, because they've only played live in Ireland and Europe. They haven't been to the States, I don't think. So I have no idea what they're like live, except for your photos. But
okay.
That band Otherkin, like, they're fucking incredible. Like,
yeah, they're one of the best live bands. They're one of my favorite bands to shoot as well. They're amazing. Luke, the front man, is just incredible. He, like, jumps in the audience in every gig. It's one of those gigs where the audience plays a massive part in the show, and it's very much a conversation between the band and the audience, and there's so much interaction. He gets down several times into the audience during the show, and I absolutely love that, and it's amazing to photograph. I shoot them every day. Yeah, no, they're incredible.
Yeah. And what's top is, like, they're like a prime example for me where it's like, I mean, obviously, like, having great lighting and everything's amazing, but, like, they usually play, like, pretty small venues, or venues where, like, it doesn't have, like, theater-level light, so
yeah.
The fact that you have to get so crafty within how you approach shooting them, that must be very, the challenge of that must be very fun, like.
Yeah, exactly, it's very challenging, and it's funny, they played Whelan's last year, and, like, Whelan's is notoriously difficult to photograph just because of how small it is, and there's no photo pit, and the stage is only about, like, knee high, so, like, it's very hard to get up in the front and shoot, and the lights are super close to the artist, so, like, their heads are super, super bright, and then the rest of the body is super dark, and, like, it's really hard to get anything great. And I was going to shoot that gig, and I was in a terrible mood all day, and I was feeling really sick, and I nearly wasn't going to go. And my dad was like, go on, you'll have good fun, and you'll get some good shots. And eventually I was like, fine, I'll go. And as I was walking out, I never, ever, ever bring a flash to a show. And for some reason I was like, I saw my flash on my table, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to put it in my bag, I might need this. And then I shot like the first 40 minutes of the show with no flash, and I got absolutely nothing usable, not one single photograph.
Wow.
And then I knew Luke was going to come out into the crowd, and I was like, I'm going to put the flash on. And I know they don't allow a flash in there, but I know the band, so they weren't going to give out to me, and I got away with it. And had I not brought the flash, I would have been screwed. And I got some of my favourite photographs I've ever taken when he came into the crowd, because I had the flash with me. And it's ended up on, like, their tour posters and everything as well. But yeah, it's definitely a challenge, and I had to kind of learn on the spot then how to use a flash in a live setting and stuff like that. So yeah, no, they're great. They're amazing.
That's really wicked. And also, for the people listening who won't be, who definitely wouldn't be aware because they weren't around when we had the conversation a couple days ago, you have, like, some of the coolest fucking parents ever. And you just kind of brought up that story. Like, the way your dad was like, oh, I'll go to the show, have fun. My dad never say that.
Really?
Like, no, fuck no. That's so cool.
Well, my dad, like, drove me everywhere. Like, I did my first music video shoot when I was 14. On my last day of second year, which is, for Americans, you're in second year, about, you're 14 at the time, and I just finished at school on my last day, and I was going to do my first ever music video shoot. My dad drove me into the gig, to the location. We shot the video, and then I started like doing work experience at like a radio show in Dublin, a hip hop radio show with a guy, DJ Moke. He used to bring rappers from Dublin in every week, and I'd film interviews. And that was kind of my first kind of foot in the door to the music industry. And my dad drove me out every single week to go and do those, and then he drove me to every shoot until I was old enough to start going places by myself. And my parents have been so supportive, I couldn't be more grateful for the support
you made. You know what, this ties into like something that I really respect about you too, and I brought this up to you a few days ago as well, but like how, I mean, you went to uni for a bit, but then you decided, you know...
No, I didn't go at all.
Oh, you didn't go at all?
No, I took... I did an interview, got a place in film school.
Yeah.
And then I deferred the place for a year, just so I had it there as a safety net if I wanted to go the next year. But, like, I knew I wasn't going to go.
Yeah.
It was only just, like, in case I became homeless within the year and needed to go to college or... Yeah.
But tell me this, like, because I feel like this is important for people listening, where it's like, well, I'll preface this saying that obviously within... the Western societies that we have, school obviously does play a bit of an importance, depending on what you're trying to do. If you're trying to be a doctor,
you should go to school. If you want to be a pilot, you should definitely learn how to drive a plane properly.
I would even argue, hey, it's artistry, but if you're trying to be a cook, maybe you should go to school just in case.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for most arts, and I feel like this is very, it ties into like what you just described with when you were 14 and doing that work placement, it's kind of like, I feel like what, like, the fact that you were at a young age and doing these things and being able to experience that, I imagine that played a role in informing your choice not to go to school, because you realized that, like, not only could I do these things without school, but I could actually progress from just doing it.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, I was really, it was a blessing that I discovered what I wanted to do so young. So by the time I finished school, I'd already been working and making money in what I was doing for 4 years. And so I already had 4 years of making money, and I was like, well, if I can do this while I'm in school, why would I need to go to uni? Because like, I'm getting offered jobs now that people who are coming out of the course I'm going to go into aren't being offered. So I was like, why, this isn't really that necessary. And at the time as well, when I was finishing school, kind of YouTube, my YouTube sessions and music videos and stuff were kind of my main thing. And there wasn't really like a college course that can teach me how to run a successful YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And it was already doing well, so I just thought I'll do it by myself. And the course I was going, like the closest thing in Dublin was film school, which was like is a degree in film and television production. So I could like major as a film director or as a TV producer, and like that didn't really fall in line with my goals. I knew 100% I wanted to be working in the music industry, and that wasn't going to help me get there. So I said I'll take the year and see how I get on. And yeah, it just wasn't in. It wasn't in line with where I wanted to go. And I realise how lucky I am, like, as most people when they're 18 have no idea where they want to go. When I was 18, I did. And I was able to make a self-aware decision and say, I'm going to take the path that I think is going to lead me closest to my goals.
Yeah, you know, I want to kind of ask you something a little bit wishy-washy. Not wishy-washy, but just kind of like, I think... there's definitely some Irish people listening now, and I feel like this is the moment they're going to be like, oh god, that's such like an emotional type of thing. But, you know, one of the things that surprised me, I got into photography when I was like 18 going on to 19.
Okay.
And I think something that really surprised me about it, while I was getting into it, is that like, you can really express yourself with a camera.
Yeah.
Like, you can really express your emotions or how you're feeling in a particular day or moment. And I feel like, that's going to sound obvious to some people. I feel like until you actually do photography, that's when you realize the actual application of it.
Yeah.
I wonder if for you, does photography ever feel like a form of expression for you?
Absolutely. Like, when you're walking through the world, you're looking at it with from your own point of view. And photography is kind of like, it forces you to refine your point of view. So if I show up at a scene... with a lovely view, and I see most people just arrive, they see it with their eyes in the position, whatever position they're in, and that's it. Whereas photography, you actively go, okay, how can I position myself to see this situation and this scene in the best, the most beautiful way? And everybody is going to do that completely differently. And that's why when, say, 15 photographers are shooting the same gig, 15 photographers are shooting the same gig, they're all going to take completely different photographs because their idea of the best point of view to see this show is completely different. And I think that kind of shows that that's what photography is. It's kind of showing people your point of view on the world and how you see the world. And I think that's amazing, yeah.
That's really top, though. You know, a big thing I respect about you is how you've never been the type to discriminate against genre. Like,
yeah.
And, like, looking at your work, it's been... something I try to tell younger photographers all the time is that, like, it's so easy to photograph what you like,
yeah.
But the real chance photographing things that you either don't like or don't care for, just have no context for.
Okay.
So, like, for example, it's like, when I started out, I was very big on, like, DIY bands and being around, like, bands that play DIY spaces. And what's interesting about those spaces is that eventually, they kind of, like, find a way of going, like anti-pop music, like that kind of mood about it. And I think after a while, well, definitely after a while, I found myself, just by proxy of, like, how it's progressing, shooting and working more with, like, pop acts and record labels. And what was really interesting about me going to that world was seeing how many similarities there were, much more than differences.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely like pop and definitely
Absolutely.
Enjoy shooting pop. Like,
yeah, I'm a huge pop fan.
Yeah, tell me, like, what do you think is what surprised you about working and shooting with pop acts? Like, kind of like, what's that been like for you?
I don't know. I don't think about genre being even a thing. Like, I've never been like, oh yeah, I listen to rock music. I've always just listened to whatever I like, and it's kind of the same thing with what I shoot. And I don't really differentiate. Well, like, when I'm shooting a pop show, I don't think I'm shooting, oh yeah, I'm shooting a pop show. I think I'm shooting this specific artist. And I kind of treat everyone as an individual, and I don't really, I don't treat shows differently. Like,
never, like.
No, I don't think
like
so.
Like, a show at Whelan's would have, like, almost the same attention of your detail than a show at, like, the Olympia, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I always try and make the best work I can in whatever situation I'm in, and I just kind of tackle, like, if it's a tough show, I'll tackle it, and if it's an easier show to shoot, I'll go with it. But I don't shoot pop shows any differently than I would shoot rock shows, I don't think.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to change that question a bit then, like, because I think something that's really cool about pop shows, in a specific sense, is just kind of like, just naturally because of, like, what, I don't want to say the money, but just kind of like what the opportunities those musicians have, there's, like, a little bit more to play with. And
yeah.
I wonder for you, like, what do you enjoy about pop acts specifically from a production standpoint? Because, like, you must love, like, the visual flair and artistry that sometimes these shows can present to you as a photographer.
Yeah.
What do you find very enjoyable about that?
Well, usually pop acts have better lights or easier lights to shoot than grunge bands in playing in a basement venue, which makes things a lot easier. It means you don't have to be as creative, I suppose, because it's not as demanding, I suppose, because it's just, if you, like, certain shows you shoot, like the 1975's last tour, I think it was impossible to take a bad photo off that show because the production was so good. And same, I shot Zara Larsson about 6 months ago, and it's the same again, like, the stage just looked amazing, and no matter what angle I took a photo from, it just looked amazing. Whereas other venues, like, as we're saying, like, venues that other kin were playing before, it was very, very tough, and, like, it really pushed me to be a little bit more creative. And I think they're both rewarding, and you learn different things from shooting both of those kind of shows, but I enjoy both of them just as much.
Yeah, you know, another big thing you've done is photograph Conor McGregor behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And travel with him. Like, tell me what that experience was like, because, I mean, it's one thing to see the photographs, which are really fucking cool, but, like, talk to me what that whole experience was like, because it's pretty wild.
Yeah, it was incredible. I didn't really treat that any differently either. I kind of approached that in the same way that I approach shooting a gig. So, like, when he was, like, in the gym training, I treated that as if that was, like, the rehearsals. And then, like, the walk out from dressing room to the ring was like the walk from the dressing room to the stage. And then when he was in the fight in the ring, it was like that was the gig. That's him on stage then. I'm shooting somebody on stage. Because it's a very similar situation. It's like somebody performing on a raised platform with lights on them. Like, you know what I mean? It's very similar.
Oh.
And then gyms are usually quite dark and dingy and hard to shoot. And rehearsal rooms are dingy and hard to shoot. So, I just approached shooting Conor as I would shooting anybody else, and just thought, this is another person. I'll react to whatever way they are as a person. And like, it's the same with musicians. Like, if I'm shooting different musicians, I'm going to shoot them a little bit differently, because you kind of react to their personality, and you shoot things react like in response to their personality. And it's the same thing with Connor. I've kind of learned quickly what he likes photographs being taken of, and how he likes to be photographed, and what kind of photos he likes to put on his Instagram. So I kind of shot kind of to tailor to that. And but he's very easy to photograph. Like, he always looks great, and he's always dressed really well. Yeah, it was amazing. I loved it. I loved shooting him.
Yeah, you know, tell me this, like, cause that whole experience, yeah, like, I mean, mate, like, I'm sure you get people all the time telling you, like, what a big, crazy thing it is, but yeah. I really think it's the type of thing that even, like 2 years from now, I'm gonna look back and, like, oh, shit, that, like, actually happened in my life.
Yeah, it still doesn't feel like a big deal at all, and people say, like, people always bring it up, it's the first thing people bring up when I meet them, and, like, it doesn't feel like a big deal at all, and I think it's kind of like, you know, it's quietest at the center of the storm.
Yeah.
It's like, when you're actually in it, it doesn't feel that substantial, and, like, yeah. Most of the time I was with him, especially while we were in Las Vegas, was just in the gym. So every day he'd be in his house, then he'd go to the gym and train, then he'd go home. And that was it. So I was only ever around him with his friends and his team. It wasn't really him out in public. His friends and his team don't treat him like a major celebrity.
Yeah.
They treat him like their friend Connor. And so that's just how I saw him. And then, like, fight week then, when we started doing, like, press events and media events and stuff like that, obviously, it was seeing him in public for the first time in the States, and just the mania that surrounds him, and, like, his face on every trash can, his face on every taxi, every billboard, across the MGM, everywhere. That was really kind of, like, it was hard to comprehend that, like, I think as well in Ireland, like, I find it very hard to see anybody with an Irish accent as a celebrity. Just, we're not used to seeing people.
That's not the first time I've heard that.
Really?
Yeah.
We're not used to seeing people from where we're from who talk like we do be recognised and adored on a world stage like that. So, like, I found it very, very strange to, like, because he lived, like, 5-10 minutes away from me, and I found it very strange to see somebody who lives that close to me and who I know is just, at the end of the day, just like a guy from Dublin who's happened to do really well and through, obviously, amazing hard work. But I found it very hard to comprehend that he was such a big star and how big the situation really was. And yeah, I think it will take a while for the set in, but yeah, it was incredible, yeah.
Yeah,
you know, I'm so glad I did it, and, like, I've gotten, like, so much work out of it, and, like, I think it put people's eyes onto my work that never would have seen it otherwise. And
which is an important thing. Though.
Yeah, for sure. Because
music can only go so far in some ways.
Definitely, yeah. But it brought attention to my other work as well. It brought attention to my music work, and yeah, I'm really grateful for that. And I'm really grateful for Connor to give me that opportunity, because
yeah.
He's very picky about who he lets into his team and who he lets close to him. And
yeah.
For me to be allowed that kind of personal access to him every day for that long was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I promise this will be the last thing I ask regarding this, but
it's fine.
Something that I think must have been really kind of powerful for you within that experience is that, like I know this from stuff I've read, but also from what you told me a while back, is that, like, for the most part, he pretty much just has it be, like, just Irish people around him. Like, he's very
yeah.
big on making sure it's, like you say, like, it's a tight-knit circle,
yeah.
and people are usually Irish or within that. Like, obviously, because he cares about that. And he,
yeah.
I mean, like you were saying, because you would see his, like, face on billboards and all that stuff, like, what was it like for you to realize that someone had so much care for, like, where he came from and, like, the people from where he came from in that sense?
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, he still has the same friends that he had when he was a kid, and he brings all them with him, and they've stood by him all the time, and that's why he still brings them. And then I think that's the kind of the best way to kind of keep yourself grounded as well. Like, he could easily go to and live in Malibu and hang out with Leonardo DiCaprio and other celebrities and everyone, like Drake, in the weekend all the time. And but he doesn't. He stays in Ireland, where he's from, and stays and hangs out with the people he's always hung out with, and stays with his family. And yeah, I really respect that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think when you have that much money and that much power and notoriety, I think it's very easy to kind of, well, I don't know from experience, but I can imagine it's very easy to, like, let things get away from you a little bit and kind of forget about where you came from, but he absolutely hasn't, and he's as proud of being Irish as now as he was when he was starting out. So yeah, I really respect that.
Yeah, you know, one of the big things I love about being with musicians is it's just that, actually, just being with them. Like, there's a way that musicians communicate that it would be hard for me to describe with, like, various words, but I feel like it's so specific. And I feel like when I first started photographing musicians and getting to know them personally, it was that the matter of just, like, being amongst them and communicating with them. I imagine with you, it's not that much different. Like, how would you describe the feeling you have when you're around musicians specifically?
I don't think of people as their job. I just think of people as people, and if you're a musician, you're a person whose job it is to play music, and you make music, and I don't feel different when I'm around musicians any different than I would when I'm around a plumber or a carpenter or anybody who does any kind of job. But just, I think I kind of get on well with creative people in general. Being around musicians whose work I really admire and artists who I listen to is amazing, and that's kind of my favorite thing about what I do, is I get to spend time with people who I really look up to and whose art I adore. I don't think I feel any different than I would with anybody else as well. I just try and treat everybody as a human being.
Do you feel like there was ever a time, maybe like probably years ago, because I think what's interesting about your age, and it's funny, like it's, this is actually a really big thing with me, like, particularly when I talk to people who are younger, yeah. I actually really don't like bringing up age, but I love doing it when it's, like, in the sense of context.
Okay.
And I think what's interesting with you is that, I mean, for people listening, you're 21.
Yeah.
When I was 21, I was definitely not as self-aware as you were. That's just a fucking fact. I do remember, like, as, like, I was getting older, just realizing that, like, you know, like, just from being a music fan, yeah. There were times where, like, I would put musicians on pedestals, and I would, you know...
I did definitely as well, yeah. When I was younger as well.
Yeah, I wonder, like, when you've gotten to the point where you realize that, of course, they're just humans,
yeah.
From interacting with them, like, those moments where, like, you're just having a laugh or having a chat,
yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is another person. Do you remember what it was like when you kind of had that realization, or when that just became more aware to you, like, prominent?
I don't know, it's hard for me to pinpoint, because I've been very socially anxious since I was quite young, and like it was way worse when I was 15, 16, starting out, meeting celebrities and people I admired. And like, I was nervous around those people because I was nervous around everybody, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like I grew out of idolizing people, like celebrities and famous people and musicians, probably around the same time I started to kind of get a little bit less socially anxious as well, because there's a little bit of overlap there. I don't really know where I kind of, when it happened, I don't know if it was like a switch like that either, where I just one day was like, oh, people are just people. But I think it was fairly early on. Like, the first artist I met who I was like enamored by was probably Macklemore. And I remember being super nervous to meet him and being really quiet. I was 15. And but I think fairly soon after that, after a couple more people I met, I was kind of like, everyone's just doing a job, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it's very easy as well if you've only seen musicians in a concert setting, there is a power imbalance there, because you've paid a lot of money to go and see this person, they're raised up on a stage, under lights, it's like, that setting is designed to be like the artist is above the audience in some way. And if you meet a person after a show, then it's kind of like you've just seen this person in this raised setting where they're built up to be more than you, and I have to pay money to be in your presence, and I'm lucky to meet you in person. Whereas if you meet the same person who was on stage in a completely social setting, if you walked into a bar and they were just standing there, it's a completely different context, and they haven't been put on a pedestal. And I feel like it's way more healthy to meet people in that kind of way. And once I did start meeting people I looked up to in a kind of more social setting, I found it very hard then to kind of respect that solemnity that's built and that kind of pedestal that's built at shows, and I kind of just see people on stage now as the same guy that I met in a bar or backstage or in a cafe or, you know what I mean? And there's no difference between those two settings for me anymore.
That's really beautifully put. You know, I did want to ask you about Macklemore because I do find it so interesting that he was like pretty much like the first really big star you got to interact with under that basis because I hate name dropping, but it's like for people listening who have not hung around him, that sounds so douchey. Sorry. But he's such a, there's no ego about him. Like he's such a welcoming person, and like, do you feel like that's something you noticed when you interacted with him that first time?
It's funny because he wasn't a big star when I met him. Thrift Shop came out like maybe a month or two afterwards. He's still a huge fan though, and I was enamored by him because I'm such a huge fan of his music, and not because he was a celebrity, because he wasn't yet.
Yeah.
But I remember I was really nervous, but he had like a throat infection, or he was sick, he had a flu or something, so he was on vocal rest for the whole day.
Oh, wow.
So he hardly spoke to me, but it wasn't because he didn't want to speak to me, it was because he physically wasn't allowed to speak.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of added to the kind of nervousness that I felt, because I wasn't kind of allowed to interact with him as much as I would have liked to, and he wasn't allowed to interact with me that much. But absolutely, then I met him again when he came back to Dublin and played the 3 Arena, and yeah, he is the nicest guy in the world, and I think it's very obvious. Everyone can see that. I don't think there's any question about that. That he's a very, very genuine guy, and the Macklemore you see on camera is the Macklemore that he is, and he's just a lovely, lovely person. Yeah,
he's really fantastic. You know, before I let you go, I want to talk to you a little bit about Dublin, because when we saw each other a few days back, we talked a bit about Dublin and why it's such a great city. I mean, something I love is when, like, because I told you this too, I told you like how I know loads of Irish people here in New York, great people, but I think sometimes they're not aware of how special and significant Ireland and Dublin as a whole can be. And when I talked to you a few days ago, it was really beautiful because it was clear to me that you very much see what a beautiful place it is. I would just love to hear you talk about your home a bit because I'm like, what it means to you.
I love Ireland. When I was young, when I was 15, when I was starting out, I couldn't wait to get out of Ireland. And I hadn't travelled that much, like I've been on family holidays and stuff, but I'd never like travelled myself or for work or anything like that. And I very quickly realised when I started travelling, I'd start missing Ireland when I was away. And it wasn't until I started going away that I realised how special Ireland is and how welcoming Irish people are and how nice they are and just the humour. And I feel like Irish people have a very unique world view. It's funny, I was listening to a podcast, there's a guy, Blind Boy Boat Club, who's a comedian / artist.
We're listening to the Irish Man Abroad podcast. That's one of my favourite episodes of that.
Listen to his own podcast.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And he talks about Ireland and why Ireland has such a unique world view. And it's kind of, Ireland is one of the only places you can be from and one of the only nationalities you can have that's completely guilt-free. Because Irish people haven't done anything bad to anyone. We've just been shit on by the whole world. And it's like, when the Vikings started, Vikings came to Ireland, raped and pillaged, took all the women, ruined Ireland. Then the UK invaded Ireland, colonised Ireland for 500 years, millions and millions of people died at the hands of the British. Our language was almost wiped out, our culture was almost wiped out. The penal laws were introduced to make sure that Irish people couldn't go to school, couldn't own land. Millions and millions and millions of Irish people have spread all around the world because they're pushed out of Ireland by colonisers. And Ireland is one of those guilt-free nationalities you can have. And I think because we've kind of been shit on so much in the past, we've kind of learned to develop this it'll be grand attitude. It'll be fine. And like, Irish people don't take anything too seriously, and we don't take ourselves seriously. And like, it's something I've noticed a lot, like since I've been here in the States. Like, people in the States and in the UK are kind of a little bit more uptight than Irish people. Irish people are kind of like, I've noticed a lot of people are like just on the subway and stuff getting like very agitated about like really small things that people in Ireland would just wouldn't even, like, we just write off completely, just like, ah, it's fine, it's all. And I kind of love that, and everyone's super down to earth in Ireland. and it's just such a great place. It's so beautiful as well. Like, I'm from Dublin on the east coast, and it wasn't until the last couple of years that I started visiting places on the west coast of Ireland. And the west coast of Ireland, the Wild Atlantic Way, which is called, is like truly one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life. I've been on family holidays to Italy, France, all over Europe, Greece, Spain, and there's very few places I've been that match the beauty of the west of Ireland, especially like Donegal, Galway. Like, it's just, I love Ireland. Yeah, I absolutely love it.
What does it mean for you that you got to call that home?
Yeah, I feel so lucky to be from Ireland. I don't know if that sounds very Republican and nationalist.
Well, no one probably would have pinned that until you said that.
I know. No, but I really do. I feel like Ireland is so small as well, and like it's so much harder to make it internationally as an Irish person than like coming from Ireland as it is to be from the UK or the US, especially in music, especially in entertainment. Like, Ireland's a very new country. Ireland is less than 100 years old as a republic. So like,
people forget that.
Yeah, it's a very new country. We only got independence in 1921, and like, we've only had since 1921 to build a country, to build a like, our media is only that old, our art is only that, like, it's, we haven't had the time to build up hundreds and hundreds of years of practice that like the UK and the US have. So we're kind of like making it up as we go along and trying our best. And there's so much talent. Like, there's only 4 million people in the whole country. And like, that's tiny. Like, there's 16 million people just in London, maybe more than that. And that number could be completely wrong, but there's way more people. And like, the amount of talent that comes out of Ireland in relation to how many people there actually are in the country is absolutely incredible. And the songwriting talent, and yeah, it's amazing. I couldn't be happier to be from Ireland. It kind of, you really have to work hard to make it internationally, and it kind of instills a kind of a work ethic. You can never be complacent. You always have to be pushing, and like, we kind of have to prove ourselves a little bit as well. It's weird as well, there's kind of like a cynical attitude in Ireland as well, where like, radio stations as well, and like, we don't believe in ourselves enough as well, and a lot of Irish people don't believe in themselves enough. And until they see somebody like Conor McGregor or like U2, who were like the first big band to ever make it out of Ireland, two people saw people doing well like that internationally, Irish people are like, whoa, we're only a tiny little country, a speck compared to the rest of the world. How are we going to make it when the UK and the US and the rest of the world are so big and are doing so well? But it kind of, it's funny, like, some Irish bands don't get played in Ireland until they make it in the UK or they make it in the US, because it's like, you have to be validated outside of Ireland to make it in Ireland. And it's really strange, and it's an attitude that Ireland definitely needs to get rid of, and it's one of the things that I don't like about Ireland. But also at the same time, that kind of, it makes you work a little bit harder, because it means you have to go and prove yourself a little bit more than maybe somebody would have had to prove themselves if they were in London or if they're in the US. And we've kind of got an underdog reputation, and I like that. Yeah.
Well, mate, thanks for answering that, because I mean, Ireland's definitely, Northern Ireland and Ireland proper, like, I consider them like second homes to me in a lot of ways, and I love them dearly. And yeah, that was really beautifully put again.
Thank you.
Yeah, Christian, thanks for charming me, man.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course, dude. Keep exploring, seek and find. You know you might surprise yourself. Talk without the taint to hold the doubts that should.